on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broke intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. That's your phone number. Taking your calls early and often on this Wednesday afternoon on Giants.com. That guy's Paul Dottino, back from the beach. I am John Schmelk, and we are about 9 days away from the first day of Giants practice and training camp in 2015. Dottino's chomping at the bit, but we still have a lot to play with up until then. Paul, how was your vacation?
Needed to recharge, John, and boy, am I recharged. Probably better than ever, foaming at the mouth, bubbling like that Italian sauce on the stove. Cannot wait to go.
All right, we'll be talking to Mike Wabshaw, content manager, for Vikings.com at 12:30. Until then, it'll be me, Paul, and you, the callers, at 201-939-4513. We want to focus on the defense a little bit today, Paul, and the two questions we're going to pose to people is who will lead the Giants in sacks this year? And given JPP's situation, I think that's something that's certainly open for debate at this point. Who knows how many games he's going to miss, when he's going to be here. And then, in addition to that, who will lead the Giants in tackle? So let's start with the sack question first. How do you look at it, and how much different do you have to look at it now based on the fact Steve Spagnuolo has been known to do a lot of blitzing from the secondary and from the linebacker position?
Yeah, you know, if you remember when Spags was here the first time, the Giants got a lot of production out of their safeties, James Butler and Jabril Wilson. So it's not out of the question, that the rookie safety could be the guy.
You're talking about tackles now, not sacks. Obviously.
Tackles.
Yes.
Did you say sacks
That's
first?
Right. You can do tackles
I apologize.
First.
It's not out of the question that Landon Collins could, believe it or not, in his rookie season, lead the Giants in tackles. That's not far-fetched based on what Spags does. At the same time, you'd also like to believe that Devon Kennard is going to be making a run at that number because he's a very active player who can be utilized in so many different ways. John Beeson, of course, is a guy you can't ignore, but he's got to stay on the field for 16 games. Those would be the three candidates that I'd be looking at.
I got one more for you.
Do you? Go.
JT Thomas.
You think?
I think he's going to be on the field all three downs, and that's why. I think John Beeson will probably, when healthy, he'll be on the field all three downs. So will Landon Collins. And I think the second linebacker that'll be a three-down player for this team is going to be JT Thomas.
The only counter to that would be Thomas is going to probably be more of the coverage linebacker, which would take him out of a lot of running plays if he's winding up going into the flat and trying to cover tight ends or running backs.
That's a fair point.
That would be the only thing that couldn't hurt his numbers.
In the NFL, though, you know, all these short passes, if he's dropping back into that short zone, he might make a lot of tackles a few yards down the field.
Folks, we've given you some choices.
If I had to guess, I think it's either only because I can't trust John Beeson to be on the field for 16 games. So
I
can't pick him just because we're talking about sack totals now. So I would have I would have to either go with Landon Collins or JT Thomas. I think those are my two primary guys. And frankly, I think I'd have to go with Landon Collins if push came to shove. Because I know that he probably, if healthy, will never, ever, ever, ever leave the field.
You don't like Kennard as an option then at all?
Here's the thing with Kennard. All right.
He gets around.
Kennard had some injury issues at USC. Kennard was banged up last year, off and on, early in the year. Then he got hurt a little bit late in the year, too.
Yeah.
Not positive he's going to be healthy the whole season.
Wow. Okay.
And I think also that Kennard will be used not as a defensive lineman, but I think he's going to be on the line a lot. And a lot of times the linebacker, when he's used in that way, he doesn't get covered up by other defensive linemen. He's going to have to deal with getting blocked by a lot of offensive linemen. Hmm. So I'm not sure Kennard's going to be the guy.
Okay.
Now, I think he'll be top five. Don't get me wrong. I think he'll be behind Thomas and Collins.
Okay. Viable options, all of them. Sacks. John, you know I felt JPP was going to get maybe 14, 15 this year. I really felt strongly coming into the season.
You're cutting that in half or more?
I'm just going to say he's going to be in single digits. He's not going to be part of the equation. I can't tell you exactly
how
many.
Then here's a better question. Not even picking who it's going to
be. Is there a double-digit guy?
Is there? He took the question right out of my mouth. Is there a guy that's going to get 10-plus sacks now?
I will tell you something, folks. There's a guy on this roster who has double-digit sack skills, and you've heard me talk about him now for 3 years. That's DeMontre Moore. He's got, without question, double-digit sack skills. Is he finally going to put it all together, John?
Well, will he be on the field enough to do that?
Well, if he does put it together, they'll put him on the field.
Will he earn his way onto the field?
There you go.
To be given the opportunity.
That's the better question.
Allow me to rephrase.
I'm not so sure.
I have to go with Robert Ayers. I think he's a guy that when he played last year showed he was the best pass rusher on this team that wasn't Jason Pierre-Paul. He hasn't had injury issues in the past when he was in Denver. He was a pretty healthy guy.
Right.
I think he can be a two-way player, even though he didn't play the run particularly well last year, if you look at some of the metrics Pro Football Focus has. I think Robert Ayers is the guy only because I think he's probably going to get more snaps than any other defensive lineman, and he has a lot of pass rush skill. So I'm going to go Ayers.
Could be.
And I think he's going to have 8 or 9.
You just said 8 or 9. It's funny because I was just about to say I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants have 4 or 5 guys have between 6 and 9. I don't know that they're going to have a 10-sack guy, period.
And you know what? If they spread it around enough, you don't have to have a 12-13-sack guy to be a dominant pass rush defense.
When you asked me this some weeks ago, and it was before the July 4th situation, I think I said to you, I think the Giants can break 50 sacks. And I really thought that was a realistic possibility.
Yeah. That was actually on one of our 30 questions in 30 days, if
yeah.
I remember right.
You know, now I'm thinking break 40, you know, and that's going to have to be enough now. And I'm of the belief, folks, and John, you'd have to go back historically and look at the numbers, but I'm of the belief that if you can get in the area of 42 to 45, it's sufficient. You can play the kind of defense you need to play to be a playoff competitive team if you're in that low to mid-40s range.
I agree with that.
That's where you got to be.
I agree with
that. I think the Giants can be there even if JPP misses half of the season.
If you're only at 35 sacks, being a top 15 defense can be a little tough.
Really tough.
It can be hard.
Again, folks, we're not ignoring the fact that quarterback hits and quarterback pressures are just as important as sacks, maybe sometimes more.
Obviously.
So please don't misinterpret.
Because those are more consistent week to week based on how well you're actually doing on the defensive line. Sacks can get fluky sometimes.
Fluky, and you also will run into teams that will scheme against sacks, and you're just not going to get any.
Hey, look, when you play against really good quarterbacks, like a Matt Ryan, like a Tony Romo, like a Drew Brees, like a Tom Brady, those guys are going to get rid of the ball. They're not going to sit back there and let you get those sacks on them. It's just the nature of the beast.
Right. So, in general, though, rule of thumb, I believe you got to be in that low to 40s to mid-40s range because more often than not, while the pressures and the quarterback hits over the long term are very significant and hold equal weight, in the short term, the sack numbers are what gets you the turnovers, what gets you the ball back. They're not as they're more immediate, more impactful. But over the course of time, they're kind of equal, those numbers.
They can be field turners.
Yes.
Whether it's a turnover, forcing a punt, changing
splash
field
plays,
position.
They call them.
Exactly. They can change the momentum and tenor of the game.
And you need those because here's the thing, folks. And, John, we've been watching football a long time. You can play your butt off, and you can really look good for a half and three quarters and even 3.5 quarters. And then all of a sudden there's that one drive that bites you in the butt and you lose the game. Well, you know what? If you had that one sack on 3rd and 12.
It's about making that one play. And
you
that
know?
Sack can often be that one play.
Yeah. And that's not a pressure. No. That's not a quarterback hit. Sometimes you got to have the sack because that's the nail.
You got to get home.
That drives right through the heart of the opposition. So, yeah. You do need it sometimes.
All right, give me your name, by the way. You've kind of copped that on me here.
See,
I'm not letting you get away with that, Dottino. Go with your guy.
I'm going with DeMontre Moore.
All right. How many?
8.5.
Okay. Now, how about this? And I think non-defensive lineman sack leader. You're going Kennard, right, I would assume? And that's a fairly easy one.
It's hard not to.
I agree. How about the guy after Kennard?
See, Spags likes to send safety blitzes.
I was gonna throw out Landon Collins again.
So it's not impossible that Collins could have 4 or 5.
I was going to throw out Landon Collins again.
You know?
It's a possibility. He likes to blitz off the corner, too. I'm not sure how much Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie might be blitzing, but maybe Prince could get in there a little bit.
They're not the kind of guys to me that I see that coming from. I think he's going to stick with his. Although, here's what he could do.
And I'm not sure McBride's a blitzer either, because he's really slow out of the slot.
He's not.
No.
But here's the thing. The Giants are in a dime package. Right now, who's the dime? We don't know.
Training camp competition.
Now, if that dime is Michael Thompson, he can do it. If that dime is Cooper Taylor, he can do it.
So could Josh Gordy if he's in there as the dime.
So, you know, it depends a little bit, too, on who the player is.
Not Gordy, I'm sorry.
Well, he'd be a corner.
Correct, but as they move guys around here, and the Giants, I can't think of the guy's name. Who's the veteran of the Giants safety they just brought in?
Miles.
Yes, he's a guy that, too, could be in that mix.
You know? Miles, interesting thing, John. I mentioned the other day, I was talking to Patty Traynor the other day. A lot of folks don't even think about Miles as a special teamer, but that's really where I think, in addition to whatever he can help in terms of his veteran experience as a safety, because he knows Spags' system from Baltimore, but Miles is a better special teams player than sometimes the stats give him credit for. And I think that Jeremy Miles is going to be another guy at the top of the Giants special teams depth chart.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about, and I got to tell you, folks, it takes more than just the return guy. But the Giants now have Harris, who's a gunner and a returner, okay? They've got Michael Thompson, who, if he makes the team, is going to be a specials guy. Jeremy Davis, if he makes the team, is going to be a really good specials guy. Jeremy Miles is going to be a good special teams guy. All of a sudden, the Giants are really starting to build up some depth on special teams. Mark Herzlick is still here. If he winds up sticking on the 53, he's a pretty good special teams guy. Zach Diassi's a good special teams guy.
Did you mention Casillas?
Didn't even mention Casillas. We all know he's a good special teams guy. Showed that to Belichick for years.
And J.T. Thomas can do that, too, if they decide to put him
in. So my point to you is suddenly you got like a whole pile of special teams guys now where the last several years, you know, you could count them on one hand with the Giants.
Well, I mean, you'd have got like Kiwanuka playing special teams because you had to.
Had no choice.
I know. All right, Paul, we got four full lines here. Let's get to it. 12:30, we'll preview the Vikings with Mike Wabshaw, content manager for Vikings.com. But for now, let's get to the calls. You guys have been waiting patiently. Let's do it. Nick in New York is up first. Nick, what's up, pal? Nick? Anthony's up first. Anthony, what's going on? You got the phone pot up there, Dave? I think that might be our problem. Who's up? Now we got Justin on line one. Is that who's first? Justin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, there we go. All right. Nick, Anthony, you guys stay put. We'll get to you. Don't worry about it. But we're going to start with Justin in Cincinnati. Justin, go ahead.
Looking off receivers. He was the third option.
I'm doing all right, Justin. How are you, pal?
I'm pretty good. I got a question. All right. The Giants are going to be priced against the Bengals here in Cincinnati. This is going to be the first time I get to see the Giants. So I was wondering if these practices will be open to the public.
You know what? That's a great question. That's not the Giants' decision. That's a Bengals thing. Neil, do we know if the joint practice with the Bengals in Cincinnati are open to the public for Cincinnati? They are open to the public. I know you have the times that they're. I don't know if they're open to the public or not. They are open to the public, Dave. We know that for sure. Yes, they are open to the public, Justin. Tuesday, August 11th at 3. Wednesday, August 12th at 3. And you can go to the details. I imagine it's on the Bengals website. You can see what the details are for checking out their training camp practices.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, Justin, no problem.
And, you know, I'll see you guys in a few weeks.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. Come by, say hello, all right?
All right, we'll do.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, and that, look, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. I've never – I know you've seen it before. That was the last time the Giants had a joint practice was before my time.
Yeah.
Were you here when they had the whole blow-up with the Jets that
– Oh, yeah.
That ended the whole joint practice
Oh, yeah.
And I want to get right back to the calls. But Paul, give me a quick 30-second synopsis of what happened with the Jets in that final practice that made the Giants never want to do joint practices again.
Okay, you guys, if you've ever been up to Albany, off to the side fields, not the stadium field, but the side fields, both teams were there, and they were going through head-on-head Giants offense against Jets defense. And a couple of the Jets players decided that, I guess, Jeremy Shockey was a little bit too rambunctious. And they went after him. Quite frankly, two Jets players began to jaw with Shockey. They shoved him. They screamed at him. And then they piled on and and gave him some business.
And for what I understand, the Jets defensive coordinator at that point didn't exactly discourage the behavior either.
He did not.
Donnie Henderson, right?
I was trying not to name names.
I can name names.
Okay, go right ahead. Donnie Henderson. Henderson, the defensive coordinator at the time, was very bold with his players in terms of how they were going to stand up and do what they wanted to do. And so, anyway, there was no question the Jets instigated it. Now, whether or not Jeremy may have been blapping a little, well, that's, of course, Jeremy's personality.
Jeremy yapping? I don't know if I believe that for a second.
But there was no question it was the Jets who started the physicality. I was standing right there when it happened. I saw it. I was on the sideline, and it got really ugly and nasty. And Tom Coughlin said, that's it. We're not doing this again. And it was over.
And I think that's why the Bengals are one of the teams. Marvin Lewis is a good coach. He knows what he's doing. He'll have his players under control. And the last thing we do is get your players hurt. And that's why the Giants pulled back from that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So they want to avoid injury. So I'm sure it'll be much more under control this year. That's why it's like Rich Cimini from the Post didn't try to, for the Daily News, didn't try to pick a fight with you on the sideline in the spirit of the joint practices. I would have if I was him, no?
They don't want any part of me.
Let's go to Nick in New York. I think we got these coral lines squared away now. Nick, what's going on, pal?
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, Nick. Hi. How are you, pal?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
Doing well.
I just wanted to chime in about the defensive line.
Sure.
Assuming JPP is not going to be there for the start of the season, I'm assuming he's not going to be there at all. But I think that Ayer should probably be the guy who would end up with the most sacks at defensive end. But would it behoove the Giants to keep him at left defensive end or right defensive end? You want to keep him away from the left tackle or not?
You know what? I think that's a really good question, Nick. And I think, to me, it would depend on who's the other guy starting with him. If he, let's say, for example, week one against Dallas. Dallas is a good running team. You want to put him out there with George Selvey, for example, who's a very good player against the run. I think Selvey's your left end, and I think Ayers is your right end. On the other hand, if he's out there with DeMontre Moore, I think, even though DeMontre Moore is a Giant, has played more left end, to me his natural position is right end. I think Moore is your right end, and Ayers is your left end. So I think it depends who he's out there with.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I agree with that assessment.
Yeah, it's going to be a matchup thing as far as I can tell, John.
Yeah.
And you're right about that, the way Dallas matches up. But here's the one guy, we didn't even mention him. And shame on all of us.
Well, Kerry Wynn?
Kerry Wynn, man.
Oh, I had him in my head. I don't think he's ready to lead the team in sacks.
I don't necessarily think he will, but I think he's going to get a lot more snaps than people think he will.
Oh, I think he'll get snaps, sure.
He's going to be a regular part of this rotation.
Inside and outside, by the way.
Oh, and he has absolutely worked his butt off this offseason. John.
He's here all the time.
Him and Jay Bromley.
And you could throw Ryan Nassib into that mix, too.
And Ryan Nassib. Those three guys, I think we can easily say, have made more appearances at this facility than any other player.
I think that's a fair assessment.
I'm hoping that if we can't get consistent pass rush from one of the ends, that we can get at least pressure from the middle, from like Hankins and maybe Bromley. And like you said, spread the sacks around. Everybody ends up with like around between 7 and 8 sacks. I think you can get by with that. And as far as secondary guys with sacks, you have to go with Kennard and Landon Collins. I mean, it sounds everybody seems to be going with those names, but I think those are the most likely candidates.
Sometimes the obvious answers are the right ones, Nick. I appreciate the call, pal.
Take it easy.
Hey, take it easy, man. Thanks for calling in. 201-939-4513. Look, and you hope you can get a repeat performance from Jonathan Hankins in terms of the pass rush. And Jay Bromley's going to have to prove he's consistent in other areas before he has the opportunity to get in there and use his quickness and use his skills to get after the quarterback.
No doubt.
Because look, first up, you're a tackle. You got to stop the run first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you can't hold the point of attack, you're not getting on the field.
And he's big enough to do it. He has the size. He's a big boy.
No argument for me, John. I don't know really anything about Jay Bromley, folks. I'm not going to lie to you. I just don't.
Under fire enough.
I mean, I saw the college cut-ups. Yeah, he's pretty good. He's a penetrator. He did a lot to disrupt people when he was at Syracuse. But that's Syracuse. This is the NFL. I don't know enough about Jay Bromley as a professional football player to tell you what he's going to do. I'm not even going to give you a number on him. I don't have one.
Let's go to Anthony in Rockland County. He's up next. Anthony, what's going on, pal?
Hello.
Hi, Anthony. Well, go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well.
Quick question about Corey Washington.
Okay.
Last year I watched him during preseason, had a great preseason, and I noticed that Tom Coughlin didn't play him because of him and his improvements in special teams. But I've also seen him turn heads in training camp. Now, that said, do you think he'll give him more field play this year? Because he turned heads, he gave me a kind of look like Rick DeCruz did when I watched him during preseason last year, dominating corners in the red zone. So I'm thinking Tom Coughlin may give him a little chance on the field this year. What do you guys think?
Well, I want to go back to the first point you made. Part of the reason he didn't get a shirt some weeks last year, but he got a shirt met a lot of the weeks, wasn't always because of special teams. Even as a wide receiver last year, Anthony, he was still very, very raw. He didn't run the whole route tree. He was inconsistent in his routes. He wasn't always where he was supposed to be. And in practice, frankly, he was not the best player. He did not show that he was better than Preston Parker in practice every day. So that's one thing. Now, the good news is that he's improved on a lot of those things this year. So, yes, I think Corey Washington will get a significant increase in the number of snaps he's going to get on offense this year. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Let's put it this way. If he doesn't, then that means Randall and Cruz and Beckham are all healthy and all putting up huge numbers.
Or Dwayne Harris is being really good at wide receiver, too. So let me put it this way. Anthony, if there's an opportunity and one of those guys is hurt or Ben McAdoo decides to use a lot of four wide receiver packages, I think you'll see him on the field. Now, there's a chance he might not play because Randall, Beckham, and Cruz are playing so well. That's not Corey Washington's fault. But I can tell you this. They're happy with his improvement and his progress as a wide receiver. And he's shown the coaching staff that, you know what? I wasn't just a three preseason game guy as a rookie. I have something. I'm working at it. I'm trying to get better. And people are encouraged by that progress.
Exactly. Awesome, guys. I really love the response. Thank you. Thanks to all guys.
Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate it.
John, you know what? Think about this. And I'm one of those guys who obviously loves the power running game, and I love to pound the ball into the end zone. Please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. But there are certain situations where when you're jamming everything up in there, there's just no room to go. And I get that. So you go to that spread formation inside the five, which sometimes teams want to do. If I'm going to go spread, I'll tell you something.
You want them in the game.
I'm putting Beckham, Cruz, Randall, and Corey Washington's going to be my four. And
I agree.
And it doesn't matter to me if Harris may be better between the 20s. Corey Washington's getting on the field there in that spot.
Well, if you hit the two-yard line, you spread it out like that, you're setting it up perfectly for that Eli Manning quarterback draw. No?
No.
Okay. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Abdul in Minneapolis. You're up next. Abdul, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. This time I'm trying to be really positive. The last few times have been kind of negative.
That's all right, Abdul. Whatever you got.
I think the Giants are going to get more, I think, above 50 sacks. And I think that because we have improved our run defense, so we'll be in a lot of more third and long situations. And I really think that between Ayers, Demontre Moore, and Wynn, they all could go for more than 10 sacks. I think they all have great motors. I think they'll get more playing time because of JPP not being on the field as much. And if and when JPP comes back, he'll be even another addition to a really impressive pass rush that they'll have this year.
Real quick, one thing to worry about. You talk about the improvement in the run defense. Well, that's going to be predicated on a couple things. You're taking a huge hit on your run defense with JPP being out. If he misses significant time to start the year, who knows? Because he's probably your best run defender, period, of any player on the field. And then you got to worry about John Beeson's health. So you're assuming the run defense is going to be better. I think it will be, but there are some issues you have to keep an eye on.
The guy we got from the Jets, Ellis, is that his name?
Yeah, Kendrick Ellis.
I think Ellis will be starting, starting tackling Mr. Hankins, and I think right there it'll just shore up the middle. I get it, Go ahead, sorry.
No, well, let me just throw one wild card in there for you. And this is asking a lot, and I don't want to put any pressure on him because it's not fair. But Odighizuwa was a run-stopping defensive end at UCLA, okay? And a Selvey type guy.
He is a George Selvey type.
Now, here's the thing. People project him in the pros to be a sensational speed-rushing off-the-edge pass rusher. They didn't ask him to do that at UCLA. They asked him to stop the run first. When he gets to the pros, and supposedly they're going to unlock this pass rush ability that he has because he's got the physical tools and the skill set. Now, if suddenly he's asked to do that and he takes to it well, that's going to bode extremely well for him in terms of earning snaps, because we already know he's a good run-stopping defensive end, which a lot of guys in the NFL don't want to do.
And he's also a guy that's a left end, too, by the way, not
yes.
a right end. Right?
Yes. So, Odighi Zua, if, and this is a huge if, my friend, but if he picks up the pro game very quickly and shows some of these pass rush skills that he is projected to have, I would not be surprised if he's the dark horse of this rookie class to make an impact in 2015. I'm just going to throw that out there right now for you.
Well, you guys are helping me with my argument. I really feel positive that our defense will be a lot more stout than last year, both run and pass. And my second point I want to make is that I really hope that our special teams are dominant, because the amount of draft picks and free agent money that we've thrown at special teams, if they don't win us two or three games, then I'm not sure what we're doing. You know, I think it's more than anything, the amount of time and money Reach has spent on bolstering our special teams, if they're not the best in the league, then I don't know. I'm not saying it was a waste of time. The amount of time and money and people we've spent adding to our special teams, like I think in free agency and drafted, we've drafted for that reason. So I really hope that our special teams are, you know, we show that.
They should.
Well, I think there's no doubt, Abdul, and thanks a lot for the call. I want to make sure I get these two more guys in before we get to Mike Wabshaw from the Vikings. They have the horses now. And the years past, you wonder if they had the horses. They have the horses. So we'll see if that turns into production on the field.
Yeah, it's the deepest special teams crop of players that I've seen here in a long time.
And some high-end guys. I mean, Dwayne Harris is as high-end of a special team as there is in the league.
Yeah.
So 201-939-4513. Two more calls before we get to Mike at 12:30. Let's go to Justin in New Jersey first. Justin, what's up?
Oh, hi. What do you think about the new deals? Like, Justin Houston got more money than J.J. Watt.
I don't think he got more than Watt. Oh, yeah, he got a little bit more than Watt and a little bit less than Sue. Look, here's the thing, Justin. You know, the money's always going to go up. The next guy is always going to get a little bit more money than the guy that goes before him, even if he's not the same type of player. That's just the way the economics of the game
natural
works.
Natural progression.
It's how it works. It's just how it works. You know that.
I know. That's why I laugh at these contracts.
Now I think it is funny though, because a lot of people, you know, pay attention a lot to the flash positions and everything. You see, Justin Houston got $30 more million in both Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas. That I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Now we got two more years too, so take that into consideration. But I thought that was interesting. That defensive ends are still valued now higher than wide receivers.
Well, Also,
I'm hoping our special teams improves a lot, because what I see, like the Patriots and how they are this offseason, I think that they're going to base their whole fanatics on special teams, and they're going to be very successful at that, because I believe that's the way they're going to win majority of the games. And I hope the Giants can use more special teams, like when David Wilson like helped us, got a kick return, you know, helped us out.
Hey, look, it's hard to win two or three games just based on special teams. I mean, even the best special teamers and the best special team units in the NFL, you can have two or three return touchdowns in a year, and that's on a fantastic year. I mean, I think to ask him to win that many games is probably asking a little bit much.
Here's the thing that you want to say. It's not necessarily about the impact plays on specials, although God knows the Giants would love to have some of those. You change field position.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. When you change field position, okay, 8 to 10 yards per game, your average start and your average opponent's start.
You make your opponent get one more first down to get that touchdown. You have to get one less first down to get that touchdown. I'm telling you, it might seem trivial, but it makes a big impact in the long run.
John, I'm not going to give you the numbers, but I could tell you they are dramatic. And you look at the teams that make the playoffs and don't, and the average field position start, again, it's usually between 8 and 10 yards difference. Don't think that Tom Coughlin hasn't studied that, because this team has paid a lot of attention to it, especially this offseason. Hey, thanks for the call.
Appreciate the call, my friend. Okay. And, you know, he asked about the Giants free agent addition at safety, too. We touched on him earlier. Want to give a quick bullet point before we move on?
Miles, you mean?
Yes.
Miles, you know, the thing about Miles, he was a guy who, for some reason, after he got out of Cincinnati and went to Baltimore, they weren't giving him any playing time. And then suddenly some of the guys got hurt. Miles started to get in the lineup, and he actually proved to be pretty good. And, you know, I'm interested to talk to Spags about him, especially during training camp, because I'd like to know what was it that held him back at the beginning of the year. Because when he got a shot to play, his coverage skills looked to be better than what people had anticipated. And he's also not a bad tackler. So, you know, this is a guy who knows the Spags system, will provide some experience back there with some of the young guys who are also playing at safety. I think it was a good signing. Quite honestly, I thought he was a second level tier free agent safety. And he was on my radar like back in April. And it was like, no one signed him. I don't know what the situation was.
Yeah.
But good for the Giants because it's not a bad addition.
All right, final call before we get to Mike Wabshaw from the Vikings, their content manager. They didn't get him up on the line, but let's go to Adam in Columbus, Ohio in the meantime. Adam, what's going on, pal? How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Adam. Thanks for calling in. What's up?
No problem. I made a bet with a friend yesterday that, assuming he stays healthy, Eli Manning will throw for 4,400 yards and 26 touchdowns this season. And I'm just curious on your thoughts whether that's a good or bad bet.
I think it's a good bet. I think 26 touchdowns and 4,400 yards, I think, is very realistic. I think you'll have an easier time getting the touchdowns than you will have getting the yards. I think he's going to have 30 touchdowns. 44, I would put his over-under on yards for the year around 4,500, so I think 4,400 is right about where I think he's going to end up. That might be tough, but I think you're going to get the touchdowns.
I think it's a very reasonable expectation on both numbers. However, just to caution you, if this offensive line does get its act together and that power run game starts going and the Giants add a little more balance to what they're doing, John, I could easily see Eli falling just short on both. He could have 4,200 yards and 24 touchdown passes, and the Giants might be a playoff team because they're running the ball so well. They're running for 135 yards a game. And guys like Andre Williams is running into the end zone 11 times, and Rashad Jennings has got 6 rushing touchdowns. And then all of a sudden, you're not a very happy man because you lost your bet. But the Giants may win.
Well, I'm happy enough that we're in the playoffs. I'll eat the bet if that's the case.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate it, man. All right, we'll take calls after we're done with our guests. If you want to keep calling in, feel free. We'll put you on after we're done with Mike Wabshaw, the content manager for Vikings.com. Mike, hopefully your slow part of the offseason is treating you well before we start putting pedal to the metal in about a week.
Yeah, you know what? It's even sooner for us because we play in that Hall of Fame game, guys, on August 8th.
Yeah, I forgot about that. So you guys are reporting what, tomorrow?
We play the Steelers August 8th. Mick Tinglehoff, a former Viking center, is going into the Hall of Fame. So we report to camp as a staff on Friday. Players are going to be there on Saturday.
Good stuff.
Honestly, I think Paul Dottino wants to jump on a plane to watch practice for a few days so he can get some warm-up in for the Giants camp there, Mike. Well, you guys are getting ready early and often here. A lot of people, and Paul and I are both one of them, have picked the Vikings as their sleeper team in the NFC. I love what Mike Zimmer's doing down there. How much did he change the culture and just the way that team and organization works when he arrived? How big of an impact has Mike Zimmer had on and off the field with the Vikings?
Yeah, I think it's been significant, and that's probably not unique to a coaching change. Every coach probably comes in and does it a little bit differently, but if you remember, the previous time we had a coaching change, it was Brad Childress out, Leslie Frazier in, but Leslie was on Brad's staff previously, so there was less of a culture change, as they say, whereas Mike Zimmer was brought in from Cincinnati, completely new guy, and changed almost everyone on the coaching staff, save 3 or 4 assistants. On top of that, he did some things aesthetically in the building with how the building was decorated and painted and murals and pictures up on the wall and some improvements to some of the technology. And then on the field, the pace of practice is a little bit different. The way it's structured is a little bit different. The periods are in different orders. We used to always start with special teams first. We don't do that as much anymore. In the first half of practice, there's always a big situation, where Coach Zimmer will set the offense up in a particular situation. Not as broad as, okay, 2:40 to go, one timeout. It's even more specific than that. That was something that we didn't normally do until the end of practice. So a lot of changes from Mike Zimmer since he took over. And The Vikings were 7-9 last season, which, you know, is not where you want to be, but it's an improvement from what we were the year before. And we have some components to the team that has a lot of people optimistic about the future. So we'll see what happens. But Coach Zimmer's influence and the change of culture here from him was significant.
You know, I want to build off of that in addition to your first comment about Tinglehoff going into the Hall of Fame. You know, the Giants, we had Strahan go in.
Yeah.
And Tom Coughlin embraces the Giants tradition. God knows it's a sensational one. Quite frankly, I have great respect for the Vikings tradition too. I understand, you know, the losses in the Super Bowls, but my goodness, the Purple People Eaters and all the great players that walk through those halls, they carry a lot of clout with me. I love the NFL, and I love the history of this game and the nostalgia that it brings. How much has Zimmer embraced that? Now, Tinglehoff's going in. You guys are going to the Hall of Fame. You're going to see him inducted. What role does that play, if at all, in this Vikings team?
A ton. And to be honest, guys, it surprises me a little bit that it is so important to Coach Zimmer. And not because I didn't think he had respect for the game. I know that he does, and he's been in it for a long time. But he's, you know, Coach Zimmer is not a rah-rah, ceremonious, pageantry type of guy. And a lot of times, you know, it can come off that way when you're dealing with certain aspects of the team and motivational aspects. But Coach Zimmer goes right to the alumni. He loves to have alumni come back and participate in practice on a coaching level. You know, Greg Ellis is not an alumnus of the Vikings, but he's an alumnus of Mike Zimmer's defenses. Greg Ellis was here during OTAs. Wow. Watching practice. You know, he's had other former Vikings come here and watch practice. The last day of our mini camp is an alumni day where Coach Zimmer has alumni come out and watch practice, and they have a barbecue in the backyard. So, I mean, you know, he does embrace it. And I think the reason he does is because he thinks that players who are playing today can learn. Even though the game has changed, they can learn from some of the all-time greats. From a technique standpoint, from a mindset standpoint, and just kind of a respecting the history of the game standpoint. So it's a big deal for Coach Zimmer.
Before we start breaking down the personnel, we're joined by Mike Wabshaw from the Minnesota Vikings. Mike, want to just touch briefly on the stadium situation. Obviously, you guys don't have the new building ready yet. You'll be outdoors playing at the University of Minnesota College Stadium this year. How do you guys expect that to affect the way the Vikings play, and are we going to see an extra heavy dose of Adrian Peterson now that he's back in the mix?
And before you answer that, Mike, I'm on the sidelines during the games, and this is going to be in the middle of December. What are you doing to me? I needed that building finished.
Hey, you better get friendly with the Giants equipment manager, because you're going to need a parka, you're going to need a hat, you're going to need some foot warmers in your boots, okay? You better come with your A game, because it's going to get cold here in December. I mean, I'm standing outside right now. It's 90 degrees. It can get hot here in the summer, but, you know, it can get below zero in the winter. Ask the Carolina Panthers. They came off of their bye. Well, I believe it was last November. They came off of their bye week. They were all, you know, in Turks and Caicos the week before, and they came to the University of Minnesota to play us, and it was freezing out. It was right around zero, and, you know, we were able to upend them. Subsequently, they went on a great late-season run. That was a good team that we beat. But, yeah, you know, it can get cold in December. I don't know how much it changes the way the Vikings will play. The reason I say that is because with Adrian being back, I think that we're going to, you know, I think that running the ball is going to be a focus anyway. And I know people with Norv Turner, they like to focus on the passing game. They think of Antonio Gates and Phillip Rivers and Troy Aikman and
run
Michael
first.
Irvin. But, yeah, if you look at Norv Turner's history, if he can run the ball, he's going to run it. And with Adrian Peterson, you know, in the backfield, I think Norv's going to lean on him quite a bit. Obviously, that's going to help you in some of the cold weather games, but it's also going to help you in some of the warm weather games too. So, but you know what, guys? Hopefully, we're to the point with Teddy by then where we're an offense where we can run or pass. Whatever we have to do, we're going to be able to do it, whether it's cold or warm weather. Hopefully, we're to that point. If we're not, it sure is nice to have number 28 to lean on.
Now, honestly, and I'm not trying to be funny, you guys played there last year at the College Stadium. How did that field hold up? Because don't you guys have not only college games, but don't they play high school games there too?
Yeah, but that's not really a factor. It's an artificial surface.
It is. See, I thought it was grass. My bad.
Yeah, no, it's artificial. By then, the high school season is going to be over. The Gopher season is pretty much over. So that, you know, fortunately, that really wasn't a concern. Now, if you remember back in 2010, guys, We had to play a game there when the Metrodome roof collapsed.
Yeah.
Now, back in that, at that time, that field was not heated. Now that field is heated. So, all joking aside, it's a nice place to play some games, in the interim while the stadium is being built. It's a nice place for us to go and play games. They were good hosts for us last season. They will be this season as well. The new stadium is 65% complete. They just reached that threshold last week. So it's really starting to take form. And when you guys come here in December, that thing will probably be enclosed, and they'll all be working on the inside. So it'll be kind of a cool thing for you guys to check out when you get here.
We look forward to it. And you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater, Mike, very quickly. You know, you hope he is where you guys want him to be at the end of December. I, for one, thought he was the best quarterback in that draft class last year. I'm a big Teddy Bridgewater fan. How much progress have you guys seen from him since he walked into the building, and even from what you've seen in the spring so far based on what he did last year?
Well, the one thing you notice about Teddy this offseason is he's matured physically. He's got a bigger body. Right? He's gotten a little bit stronger. I mean, we have to remember, last year he was the youngest player on the team. He's 20 going on 21 years old. So he's still got some maturing to do physically, and so he's going to keep getting bigger. It's not that he was in the weight room, 8 hours a day bulking up. It's just, he's getting older and maturing. He's still at that point in his lifespan where he's maturing. So I noticed that right away. And then Mike Wallace coming here, guys, has really given this offense a different dimension.
Yeah.
Every team has a lot of fast guys. But Mike Wallace is a different kind of fast. He's got elite speed, but he's also able to track the ball well, and he is a legitimate bona fide threat that defenses are going to have to pay attention to. They're going to have to roll coverage to his side. That should open things up either for Adrian in the running game or maybe for Kyle Rudolph, our tight end, or maybe for our number two receiver. So, and I've noticed a nice connection between Teddy and Mike Wallace. So, to me, the two things I've noticed with Teddy is he's gotten a little bit bigger, and I noticed that he had a great connection with Mike Wallace on some of those deep passes, and that was a missing element of Teddy's game last season until the end of the year when he started to show some improvement there. Add in Mike Wallace, and I think that improvement is going to be accelerated.
Chad Greenway still back there on defense. Love him. He's one of the really terrific linebackers in the game. You know, had you guys allowed him to get away, and I don't know how close it was to bringing him back or letting him escape, but I just think he's a hell of a player, and I think it all starts with him on your defense. Am I still right with that, or has that changed?
Yeah, no, you're still right with that, I think. I think that's an astute observation. He's not anymore the most physically talented player. He's got some limitations to what he can do. But the great thing about Chad is he knows what those are, and he's a smart, heady player who can line people up, who can anticipate. So he's still very, very much in the mix. Had he not missed four games last year, guys, he would have led our team in tackles for the seventh straight season. It would have been a franchise record. And he did it for six, which tied Scott Studwell, another great linebacker. The guy's a tackling machine. He's around the ball a bunch. And, he's a leader for us on and off the field. He's one of those guys where Canton is probably not calling for Chad Greenway, but he's a guy who certainly will have his name up in our stadium at some point. I mean, he's been here every step of his career. Great guy from South Dakota, so he's from the Tri-State area here. One of those guys you take a lot of pride in having on your team and in your organization.
I'm not sure, Mike, if there's another team with more top-flight young talent on defense than the Vikings have, from Anthony Barr to Sherry Floyd. Linval Joseph's a young veteran still. But in the secondary, there's not a ton of experience back there. They brought in Terrence Newman, who seems to just follow Mike Zimmer around like a little lost puppy. Wherever Mike Zimmer shows up, Terrence Newman's only a step behind. And you have Captain Munnerlyn, who obviously has some experience. But Xavier Rhodes, young corner. Harrison Smith, young safety. Josh Robinson, not a ton of experience. Trey Wayne's obviously your first-round pick this year. That's a lot of young, talented guys in the secondary. Is there a belief that these guys could all mature at the same time? And if they do, is there a belief that secondary could be one of the better ones in the league this year?
I think so, and right now it's just a belief. You got to see it on the field, and we haven't seen that yet. Now, in 2013, the Vikings' pass defense was historically bad. In fact, it was the worst in Vikings history. 2014, first year under Mike Zimmer, made huge strides and came up to the middle of the league. And since then, they've made some improvements. Namely, they've added Trey Waynes. in the first round of the draft. You mentioned him, and then you also mentioned Terrence Newman, so they added some talent there. You know, the Vikings have three former first-round picks in that secondary with Harrison Smith, Rhodes, and Terrence Newman. You know, it's really one of the areas to watch at training camp for the Vikings, guys, is the secondary, and from two standpoints. One is, literally, who's going to make the roster? I mean, after Trey Waynes and Xavier Rhodes, who are basically locked, I think it's an open competition. You're probably going to keep five or six corners, and after Waynes and Rhodes, it's an open competition, so you maybe have three or four spots completely up for grabs. You have Harrison Smith as your starting safety, but after that, you have another starter you need to figure out, and you need two backups you got to figure out. That's completely an open competition. So young and inexperienced is that secondary. The good news is they have Mike Zimmer, who we all know and respect as a defensive guy, but even as a secondary guy. And we also have Jerry Gray on our staff, who's a former defensive coordinator. He's our secondary coach. So as inexperienced as they are in that back end, they've got some great coaching, and I think they have a chance to be good. That's what I'll say. They have a chance to be good. Whether or not they get there, we'll see. But they certainly have the talent, and they certainly have the coaching.
Mike, this is a Giants show, so if we didn't ask you about what's going on with Linval Joseph and what you guys have thought about him since he signed with Minnesota, we would be remiss in doing so.
Yeah, Linval, I really like Linval a lot on a personal level.
So did we, by the way.
Really nice guy.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. He seems like a great guy. You know, we had a scare with Linval last year, if you remember, where he was involved in an incident, a shooting incident. He was not involved as the shooter. He was a victim of it.
Yes.
But fortunately he got through that and he played for us last season. You know, our run defense left a lot to be desired, guys, but I think if you really drill down, go back and watch it, and I know defensive tackles get analyzed by how the team did against the run. It wasn't the fault of our defensive tackle. Linval is a good two-gapping defensive tackle for us. He's a space heater. He can keep those linebackers running free. You know, to me, Linval into our linebackers, specifically guys like Chad Greenway, who's very good at chasing and tackling, it's a great combination. So I really like what Linval can bring. Hopefully we can play better around him and increase the numbers for our run defense. But I like Linval a lot. He brings great savvy, great experience. He has been to where we want to go. We want to go to the Super Bowl. Linval knows the roadmap, so he's a guy that we love having around. And I know he's a guy that Mike Zimmer loves to have. If you look at his defenses throughout history, he's got that two-gapping, run-stopping defensive tackle who's a good leader, and that's what Linval Joseph can be for us.
And I got to imagine Eric Kendricks drafting him, one of the big additions, trying to get that run defense a little bit better. Last question that's the goal. Last question, and you mentioned the Mike Wallace being that deep threat. The guy I think a lot of Viking fans probably thought would be that deep threat last year was Cordarrelle Patterson after breaking out the final half of his rookie season. Didn't happen last year. We've seen North Turner reach these wide receivers before and have success with guys with talent that haven't put it all together. What's the deal with Cordarrelle Patterson? What are the expectations for him? How did he look in the spring? And do you think he's going to be a factor this year or not?
Yeah, well, first of all, he's our kickoff returner, and he's really one of the best in the league when you look at the numbers, the touchdowns, and the average, and our average drive start. And you have to look at the average drive start as well as the actual kickoff return numbers, because it's gotten to the point where teams are kicking away from him. They will squib kick it, they will mortar kick it, they'll kick it out of bounds, and we're starting at the 25, the 26, the 27, the 30-yard line consistently, because either they kick it to him and he pushes it out that far, or they kick away from him, and the kick doesn't go as far. You know, so he helps us in that way. Where he needs to come along, and you were alluding to it, is as a receiver. And you guys know this from being around the Giants and from being around other teams. A receiver is not an easy position to learn. You don't just run out there and start running routes. You got to know the route tree. You got to know your depth. You got to develop timing. You got to learn to get off of press coverage. You got to read man and zone. And I think Cordero's learning that and developing that. And the other thing with Cordarrelle is this will be the first year in the last 5 years where he will be in the same offense for a consecutive season.
Wow.
I think that's going to pay dividends for him. Finally, he's learning the same offense 1 year that he learned the year before. So I think that's going to help him out a little bit. And also having Mike Wallace and the emergence of Charles Johnson may put a little less pressure on him to just press the outside, and it may allow Norv to use him in different ways. You can motion him. You can put him in the slot. You can put him in the backfield. You can run ends around or reverses with him, and almost use him more like we used Percy Harvin, if you guys remember that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Percy was our, you know, he was our best receiver, but he wasn't our number one receiver.
Right.
And it's kind of a weird thing to think about, but I think Cordarrelle has that ability because of how many different ways he can impact the game. So I'm not going to paint a completely rosy picture for you on Cordarrelle. I just see that there's a lot of talent and potential there, and I don't think the book is written on him. And if you look historically at receivers, the third year is a big year for them. Go back and look at Roddy White's first and second year numbers, and then look at his third year. Look at Demaryius Thomas's first 2 years, look at his third year. And so I don't think the book is written on him. I think he's got a chance to be good for us, and I think there are a lot of good things going on with this team, and a lot of those good things will help Cordarrelle, such as Adrian coming back, the signing of Mike Wallace, and hopefully the emergence of Teddy Bridgewater. All that should help Cordarrelle.
Mike, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Put aside a couple Parkers for us when we show up at the end of December. We're going to need them. Even if they're purple, it's okay. We'll wear them as long as it keeps us warm. Thanks a lot, man. And enjoy your last 2 days of freedom before camp starts, all right?
Hey, enjoy
I'm
the Hall of Fame,
happy
Mike.
Happy to join you guys. Thanks for having me. Hey, one tip. If you're really cold and you stomp your feet, that gets the blood moving, all right?
So all right.
Yeah, I heard
on
that.
The sidelines, you're miserable. Just stomp your feet.
Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
Appreciate it. Okay, you can take that advice on your power walks. Stomp, you can stomp along on your power walk. That'll help
I may have to pop in on Bud Grant before that game.
That was Mike Wobshaw, content manager for Vikings.com. Fantastic. Good information from him. That should be, and I'll tell you what, Paul, next to last game of the season, that could be a very, very important game, not just for the division now. If the Giants are in the wild card mix, they could be going head-to-head with the Vikings for that wild card spot.
You want that game to be important.
You absolutely do. Yeah. 201-939-4513. 9 minutes to play with. A couple more calls.
And if it is, it may move tonight.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that. Stop. Will you stop? Actually, I'm in the warm booth. It wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, I know. Move on.
You, I would hear Howard Cross belly aching to me in my IFB the entire game.
You guys think that I'm a problem? No, Howard is just on the sidelines. Howard is a terror. If there's one drop of rain, the slightest drizzle, he's running for cover.
I don't think if it's like zero or minus five, I don't think Howard's making it through that whole game. I think he's gonna cash in his chips by about midway through the second quarter.
See, my problem is I'm so jacked up, I don't even know what temperature it is.
Yeah, you're naturally numb anyway.
Yes,
so it's
exactly.
Fine. All right, 201-939-4513. Michael's all the way out in California. Michael, welcome to the show. How are you, pal?
I'm good.
Hi.
Hi, Michael. What do you want to talk about?
I'm going to talk about Eli Manning's stats next year or how that will affect his contract.
Sure, go ahead.
Will he get the new contract deal?
Say that again, Michael.
I didn't understand
it. And if he doesn't, sorry.
No, Michael, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you there. Can you repeat your question, please?
Will Eli Manning get his contract this year, and will it matter if he has a bad year?
Okay, well, first thing is you want to know about Eli's contract. He's entering the final year of his contract this season, 2015, okay? It is believed that he'd love to come back. It's believed the Giants would like to keep him.
I think that's fair to say.
So in all likelihood, it would behoove everybody to get that thing squared away and have it done sooner rather than later so that he doesn't have to test free agency in 2016.
I don't think anybody would be surprised if that did in fact happen.
I would quite honestly be surprised if it didn't happen
before
opening day. In fact, maybe even in the next couple of weeks. But in any event, I don't think you have to worry much about him because I think everybody is on the same page here in terms of what they would like to happen.
Okay. But if, in the case he didn't sign, which team would he go on to and which team needs him?
Oh, well, I mean, you can list a dozen NFL teams that could use Eli Manning based on the quarterback situations. And the other question you asked before, Michael, was that would him having a theoretical bad year affect the contract? I mean, if a guy comes out as a terrible year, would that affect your value? I guess probably. But I don't foresee it taking that long, and I don't foresee him having that bad year. And look, I mean, how about the team across town? You don't think the Jets would sit there and throw a bajillion dollars at Eli Manning to go quarterback the Jets?
All I'm going to say to you is I think Eli Manning will have a better year than he even did last season. Second year now in the McAdoo system.
And I think in this final game as a pro, he'll be wearing a Giants helmet.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think you're ever going to see him play anywhere else. Of course, a lot of people in Coatesville thought the same thing about Peyton.
True.
You never could tell, but I would put my money on Eli being a Giant.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Then again, the Peyton thing was weird, though. I mean, if the Colts weren't so bad that year and even if he was hurt and they had the second pick in the draft and they didn't get a quarterback,
right.
Manning would have been back.
Yeah.
Once
circumstances.
Andrew Luck fell into their lap, it was such a unique, weird situation
Yes.
I haven't heard from Rocky in Panama City in quite some time. Rock, what's up, pal?
How's it going, Smell?
Doing well, Rock. How are you, buddy?
Hey, B-Dot.
Hey, how are you?
All right, I'll try to make this quick. I know we're running short on time, but a few shows ago, less than a need, somebody had called asking about Coon switching to offensive linemen, and they said they heard nothing come up, that they wasn't familiar with anybody that did that. But J.R. Sweezy, I think his name, from Seattle, he had done that.
Now, there are some players that have swapped O-line, D-line. That's happened before. It's usually actually the other way around. Isn't it usually the offensive lineman that'll switch to defensive tackle?
It's been done
both ways. But I don't think Marcus Coon would be one of those guys, to be honest with you.
To my knowledge, the Giants have no plans to do that. I mean, I don't see it, but has it been done? Sure, it's
been
done.
And as big of a guy as Coon is he big enough to be an offensive lineman?
He's got bigger.
Guard?
He's gained a good 10, 12 pounds.
You have to be a guard.
This offseason.
He's not the tallest guy in the world.
He'd have to be a guard if he was.
Yeah.
But here's what I will say to you. Most of the time, those conversions are made when the guy is in college. They don't do it very often in the NFL.
And usually the conversion we made as soon as the guy's drafted, or maybe a year.
Yeah, I didn't want it to happen, but I was just trying to answer anybody that was maybe wondering. But on OTAs and minicamp, I know when Alvarez was at New England to start the season, he was playing like some West Coast fullback stuff. McAdoo lined him up at fullback any and threw to him?
And again, he's not going to be a traditional fullback, obviously. I did not see any dual halfback formations over the course of camp.
Not so
far. That's all I was wondering about.
All right, Rock. No worries, buddy. Good to hear from you. I'm sure we'll hear from you a lot more as training camp gets here, right?
Yeah, I usually lay low in the offseason.
I know you do, Rock. Thanks, pal. Take it easy, my man. All right, Paul, I got 3 minutes here.
I was only going to say about Vereen, if I may. I do think that Vereen is a much better runner than people give him credit for. I think they put him in a box and just say he's a scat back, he's a third down guy. But if you've looked at his ability to run the ball on occasion with the Patriots, when they did let him run it, he was effective.
Yeah,
run the ball.
He's never going to be a bell cow, but you can't use him in spurts.
Absolutely.
I agree with that.
He could definitely run the ball.
All right.
So, anyway.
Here we go. A couple nuggets for you. First, and I can ask these questions to you next week again, too, but I'm going to ask a couple now because I have 2.5 minutes to do it.
Okay.
First practice, the team splits up into positional drills.
Okay.
Each position on their own.
Right.
Which group are you watching and why? I know that's all you were thinking about on the beach the last week, so I know you have your answer.
At first, if they're just in positional drills,
yes.
When they're by themselves, I'm looking at the safeties. Because they're really thin and they're very inexperienced.
What if I tell you Victor Cruz is not on PUP? Do you look at wide receivers first?
I've already seen him run and do a lot of things that they would be doing in individual drills. I've seen that before.
But Beckham hasn't practiced in a while either.
I need to see those guys when they're making contact drills.
Okay. That's fair.
I don't need to see them in individual position drills. I've seen that before.
Them doing stuff without any competition, no contact, isn't helping you at all.
That doesn't help me.
All right.
I need to see the next step up, and I'm not seeing that in positional drills. What I would like to see in positional drills, I'd like to see the alertness, the assertiveness, the body movements and the body language of the young safeties. That I could look at in positional drills and still get something from.
All right, how about this? First day of padded practice, what's the first group you look at?
I got to be looking at the offensive line.
Okay.
And I will tell you, one eye will be there and the other eye will be on Cruz to see how he gets off the line and to see how he deals with physicality. I mean, look, Here's the one thing he admitted. And, folks, remember now, I'm wavering on this. I was convinced earlier this year that he was going to be PUP. I was convinced. Mm-hmm. He has me waffling big time.
Hey, you know me. I'm very cautious by nature when it comes to injuries, and so are you. But
have you seen him?
He looks so damn good.
I know. It's not supposed to be that good, but he looks great.
I know. He looks fantastic.
All right. But he himself has admitted he hasn't been out there in contact with the full pads, doing all the stuff he's got to do.
Basically, his body hasn't had to react to something that's unexpected yet.
Nor
with another person in front of him.
Nor has he had to employ any type of strength movements. He's done quickness and speed, but no strength movements yet, where he's really got to stop and dig and, as you say, work against somebody. How about just pushing off press coverage at the line?
Absolutely.
That's a big deal. Victor admits he hasn't done any of that yet. That's the next step for him, the next test. I got to watch that.
Paul, fun show.
Me too, I agree.
Lance is solo tomorrow, then me and Paul are back on Monday. No show on Friday this week on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And then next week we'll start previewing camp. Maybe we'll get a little guest on. We'll have a little bit of fun, all right?
Did you tell people about the time? No?
That's not changing next week yet.
Not yet.
Friday will be the first time it's a change, so I don't want to give them too far in advance.
Okay, you'll have to keep it tuned.
Parachute in, you screw everything up.
I'm just trying to accelerate things. I want to start now. Why do we have to wait? 8 more days.
Go enjoy your weekend, will you?
All right.
For Paul Dottino, I'm Todd Schmelk. I'll see you on Monday. Lance tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live. No show on Friday. Everybody have a great day.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!